Welcome to Covenant Presbyterian Church in West Des Moines, Iowa. This educational offering is part of our mission to bless our neighbors to the glory of God. We hope it blesses you.
This afternoon, a very good friend of mine up in Waterloo, where I lived for 13 years, she was the curator for the arts in Waterloo, the arts center up there. And she is delightful. And she posted an absolutely beautiful poem that has become the poem of COVID of 2019. Her name is Kitty O'Meara. She also now has published it as a children's book. But here is the poem, and it struck me. It was absolutely beautiful. So please bear with me for maybe a minute and a half. The title is, And the People Stayed Home. And the people stayed home and read books and listened and rested and exercised and made art and played games and learned new ways of being and were still. And listened more deeply. Some meditated, some prayed, some danced, some met their shadows. And the people began to think differently. And the people healed. And in the absence of people living in ignorant, dangerous, mindless, and heartless ways, the earth began to heal. And when the danger passed and the people joined together again, they grieved their losses and made new choices and dreamed new images and created new ways to live and heal the earth fully as they had been healed. I think that's amazing.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you for your patience on that.
Awesome.
It struck me, and I thought tonight with our diverse topic, as I'm reading all of the different things that were happening, and all those souls individually were doing different things as they chose. And I think that's so applicable to where our energy goes this evening with Nathan. So thank you.
Thank you, Bev.
Yeah,
you're welcome. Thanks, Bev.
Thanks. I just wanted to share it. It's just like, it was a beautiful piece. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank
and
you.
And a lovely sort of way to bring last week's conversation into this, because we have, obviously, you know, we have by and large stayed home, and not everyone has stayed home as much as they ought to have, but that we have stayed home, and we've done that to care for each other. And there really is something beautiful to that. So,
and the silence speaks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like that.
So I also begin this evening with a program note. The program note is that I'm going to be on vacation next Monday. And I'm behind enough on things that I don't have anything like set up as far as a topic with a guest speaker or anything for you all on Monday evening. So the good news is that y'all are a very safe group to be with. And so if any one of you has most of you are a very safe group to be with. So if any of you has a topic that you are, you know, that you've kind of been thinking on, either some of the material from the Equity Challenge that you want to sort of spend more time on, or something that, you know, is of interest to you that you want to just kind of share with us, if you want to have an accordion recital, this would be a great chance to just let y'all have a conversation together. About just kind of whatever's interesting to you. Bruce can teach you all magic tricks.
Warren, we got permission.
Never going to happen.
Barb's not here. She won't say anything. Does he play the kazoo while you play the accordion?
Bruce, we got to do this group a favor. No kazoos, no accordions.
Thank you.
Chicken.
No.
So sit with that question at least until the end of our conversation this evening. And if there's something that you think, yeah, I'd kind of like to talk about that with folks. You know, we don't need experts in the room. We just need people who are interested in having a conversation. So I would be very happy to hand that to somebody for next week. You don't have to do the technical hosting end. Deb will do that. She just found out. But anybody who wants to share something, I would very much welcome that. So
very nice. Thanks, Nathan, for this.
You bet. So for this evening, you responded with some interest to the Equity Challenge presentation by Max Mowitz, the LGBTQ 101. So 101 is, of course, the introductory entry level. Education looks like it is actually a big piece of what Max does at One Iowa. So they would be a great conversation partner for an even more in-depth dive into this if we wanted to go even farther. I'm going to share with us a different sort of 101 level presentation that a friend of mine has also done. And I called them up and said, hey, could I borrow that set of slides? And they said, sure. So during the Equity Challenge, Max talked about the difference between sex, sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression. And Bev says, that was overwhelming.
I had to listen to it a second time and I was still lost.
Great. That's good. So we've got another shot at that again this evening and a chance to slow down and ask questions too. So, the why this matters, this is from the Equity Challenge materials again, the statement that ongoing discrimination rooted in homophobia and transphobia has a significant negative impact on members of the LGBTQ plus community, including at least 4 specific measurable negative impacts: increased physical and emotional health risks, increased risk of becoming victims of violence, career and financial instability, and higher rates of homelessness, especially among LGBTQ plus youth. Now, as we enter into this conversation this evening, I can also recognize that for a lot of Christian history, there has essentially been a dominant religious position that the Bible rejects these LGBTQ plus identities. Even before the language around what we mean by LGBTQ plus identities sort of came into being. There is also a well-reasoned Christian position for inclusion and affirmation of folks who are LGBTQ plus. On balance, in my own discernment work, I have landed on the side of inclusion. I would be happy to do a Bible study at some point to talk about how we got there. I have the materials. Tonight, I actually want to, before we would get to that, I would want to talk about kind of what all of this alphabet soup means, kind of at the beginning, because if we don't know who we're talking about, it's really hard to do the Bible study well. So I want to acknowledge that this is not a religiously neutral topic. and that it is a religiously complicated topic. And then I want to set the sort of the those religious questions of inclusion versus exclusion. I want to set those actually aside because we need to talk also about just understanding who people are. I'm getting echo out of your computer, Deb. I'm not sure why that is. And not all the time, interestingly.
Right.
So who knows? So I want to acknowledge not only that we need to understand what we mean when we're talking about LGBTQ plus people, also to really recognize, as the Equity Challenge put it, that this is also a matter of people's well-being to be able to understand and deal with this well, kind of regardless of whether someone belongs in your religious community or not. So for instance, Muslims don't belong as confessing members of our religious community. That's not because I don't like Muslims, it's because they're not Christian, right? So this is sort of that difference between affirming someone and whether or not we include that someone. And again, I would, I personally come down on the side of inclusion, but I want to acknowledge that you don't have to be at that place in order to have this conversation. Final acknowledgement. As I said, I'm going to use some content that was shared with me by a friend of mine. My friend identifies as genderqueer, and they use this material actually with some frequency, specifically to provide education to straight and or cisgender folks. And we'll get to some of those definitions as we go along here.
Cisgender. Thank you.
So I want to acknowledge that this is somebody else's material. I want to acknowledge that we each of us have kind of varying degrees of familiarity with not only the issues, but we have probably varying degrees of recognition of who the LGBTQ plus people in our lives are. I do want you to know that the people we're talking about this evening are in your lives, whether you know it or not. And even if you know some of who's in your life, there are others who are in your life that you don't know. Kind of carrying over the set of ground rules for good conversation that we shared during the Equity Challenge, but please also be mindful, particularly when we're talking about LGBTQ issues, please don't out anybody without their consent. You might have to abstract your stories a little bit if you want to talk about someone that you know. But please don't disclose someone else's identity unless you know for certain that they are completely out. Just kind of acknowledging that ground rule. And I want to acknowledge that I'm teaching this intro. Again, this is designed for straight cisgender people. I am a straight cisgender person. And so I'm teaching this material partly so that the LGBTQ people in your life don't have to teach you themselves. Because part of being an ally, we talked about that a couple weeks ago, is that to be an ally, we educate ourselves without putting the work on the minoritized people in our lives, because they have hard enough work to do going through life because of the way that the world is set up for dominant identities like mine. So I'm not speaking as an expert. I'm speaking as someone who is still learning this stuff, and partly I'm still learning this stuff from some exceptionally generous queers I know. My friend identifies as queer. We'll talk about that word at a little bit of length. Okay, so I'm gonna begin this presentation here. And what you have here, my friend is not Ibo Barton. Ibo Barton is their friend who has done, again, some of this educational work. This is Ibo's presentation that my friend Emmett has shared with me. So, understanding queerness. And if that word queer feels a little off to you, sit with that discomfort. And again, we will talk about what that word is doing, not only in this conversation, but in this kind of broader spectrum of LGBTQ identities. So to introduce myself, hello, my name is Nathan. My pronouns are he and him. I care about LGBTQ inclusion because, and I have written this down because this is important to me. I care about LGBTQ inclusion because I recognize how powerfully the world is kind of built for cisgender, heterosexual, male supremacy, and white supremacy as a way that this all plays out. So all that other race stuff that we've talked about also applies here. I recognize that I am indebted to my friend Emmett, who shared this presentation with me. Emmett uses they, them pronouns. And they taught this introduction, Understanding Queerness, at Synod School in 2016. And so I first encountered this set of slides 4 years ago. So what's a pronoun? English teachers, what's a pronoun?
A noun that gets professional pay.
That's right, a well-paid noun.
He, she, it.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so a word that refers either to who's talking or what's being talked about. So he or she or it or I or you. There are specifically gender pronouns like he and she and hers and they. And those specifically refer to people that you're talking about. So the sort of dominant gender binary, which is the binary is too simple. This is part of the problem here. The dominant gender binary says that people come in two genders and have two different sets of pronouns, he and him pronouns and she and her pronouns, right? But part of what we're talking about is that there are folks who don't fit neatly into one or the other of those buckets. So Max Mowitz, who did the presentation for One Iowa during the Equity Challenge, on their biography page on One Iowa, they specify Max uses he-him pronouns or they-them pronouns, partly depending on how they present during on a given day. So their gender is a little bit more fluid, than mine. I have other friends who are non-binary and would not use he-him pronouns or she-her pronouns, but feel very comfortable with they-them pronouns. Because that's a they-them is a set of pronouns that is already gender neutral. Bev has a question.
But that's plural, they, them.
Mm-hmm.
So that is basically combining the he, her, or he, him, she, her. So it's a mix?
Fair question. So it's not necessarily a mix, because the idea of a mixture would assume that there's one pure thing over here and one pure thing over there. So you've got your red paint and your blue paint, and however you mix those together determines which shade of purple you get.
So some days they are the he, him, some days they are the she, her, and so they, to make it more simple, they become they.
That's,
or it becomes they.
So I see where you're going with that, and that's not quite how folks have typically described to me that they experience kind of this gender spectrum. And we'll talk maybe a little bit more about the gender spectrum, but the idea that it is that there is a spectrum of kind of ways of not only presenting oneself but identifying.
Okay.
And so it's not like there's what I want to sort of push back on is it's not the idea that that there is a he and a she and those two things exist and everything else is kind of a mixture. I want to say that he and she don't really necessarily exist any more than anything else on the spectrum does.
Okay, got it.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. So.
And there are other gender pronouns out there. There have been folks who have not felt comfortable in this gender binary who have proposed new language for various iterations of gender pronouns. I would say that generally, they, them is on the ascendancy. And I think a big piece of that is that they, them already exists in the English language as a singular usage of a word that is grammatically plural to handle the situation when you don't know the binary gender of whoever you're talking about. So you have already used this in situations that you didn't even realize you were using it. So if I, you know, if I came home from the grocery store and I said, "Oh my goodness, Bruce, the checkout person bagged my groceries terribly. Everything's a mess." And Bruce says, "Oh, were they really young?" Without thinking about it. We don't actually think about all the times that we already use they, them in that plural context when it's not appropriate to just staple on one or the other of the binary gender words. And this usage goes back centuries. Shakespeare used singular they. So, you know, not all the time, right? But there are moments when we already know that he or she is not the appropriate word, and they has already been a natural place to land. Now, there are some folks who do not identify in the gender binary and for whatever reason don't care for the pronoun they. Part of what matters here is to use the pronouns that someone recognizes for themselves. And there I just used singular they because I'm talking about a generic someone, right?
Right.
So this is a really small but easy way of acknowledging kind of what somebody's gender identity specifically is. Okay, I'm gonna jump forward here just a little bit. This is how we're going to This is how we're going to participate. This is a lot of what we already said. Like if you are using unfamiliar pronouns, think about what you're going to say before you say it, as we ordinarily ask folks to do. So here are some goals for this little presentation, to explore what gender means in our society, for individuals and for ourselves, to develop tools for fostering a gender inclusive and queer inclusive environment, and how to be a great LGBTQ ally. So you will be a little bit better equipped for that by the time we're done, assuming I have done this well. But first, we need a vocabulary lesson, don't we? So we have all kinds of letters running around here, right? Letters like LGBTQ. So those letters in order, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer. Anne has a question.
When the Q first appeared, wasn't it questioning? It wasn't queer. It was people that were, you know, didn't know if they were one of those.
Yeah. So here are some more letters. LGBTIQQAP, I missed an A in there. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex, queer, questioning, ally, asexual, pansexual. Now, often we try to actually cross this ally A out of there, because if you've got a little bit of alphabet soup, as an ally, and I have had to learn this, so I'm telling on myself here, as an ally, you are not necessarily invited to LGBTIQQAAP events. Wait to be invited. And if you are invited, take that as an honor. Part of being an ally is remembering that there need to be some spaces where we, speaking for myself again, cishet white males are not in charge. Q can also point to questioning, being not quite sure kind of where you are in this complicated mix of different identities. And some of these are gender identities, these are sexual orientations, these are ways of expressing oneself. And so this is very complicated territory. We are going to use the sort of the short acronym LGBTQ. And often there's a little plus sign placed at the end of that. That's how it was in the Equity Challenge. Sort of to acknowledge that there are even more other identities that could be added here, and that really belong in the conversation. I have also been using the word queer in this conversation, and I've been using the word queer because, again, my friend Emmett uses the word queer for themselves. And the creator of this slideshow uses the word queer for themselves as well. The important thing here is that the word queer is an in-group term. So this is a term that someone can choose to use for themselves, but I can't choose to use it for someone else. And the reason for that is that queer especially had to be sort of reclaimed from also being used as a slur. And so in order to honor the work that folks have had to do to reclaim that word and to avoid causing the pain that that word has been used to cause, I'm only going to use the word queer to describe someone who has already chosen the word queer for themselves. Bruce.
Bev and I attended a talk at the Art Center where a bunch of the people were queer. And the lady who was talking continued to use queer for the artist. And it's kind of uncomfortable to me. And I quizzed her. I said, is that okay to use the word queer? And she says, yes, that's what they prefer.
Right. And that is an they prefer. Yeah. And that is an individual... That's an individual self-identification.
Yeah.
You can also see in the little definition on your screen that this is also an umbrella term that can be used to refer to the entire LGBTQ plus community. Again, that's a word that you want to allow folks to use from inside the group rather than us applying the word from outside. Here are some other words, and some of these you may be more familiar with. That's probably why they got queer out of the way first, right?
Yeah.
So Max told us about these words as well, right? So a lesbian is a woman. And this hyphenated adjective self-identified is in this presentation. And it's there to emphasize that someone is the gender that they say they are, rather than someone is the gender that I've decided that they are. So if someone says, I'm a woman, they're a woman. If someone says they're a man, they're a man. That's what that self-identified is doing in there. So a woman who is attracted to other women, sexually or romantically, is a lesbian. A man who is sexually or romantically attracted to other men is gay. I can send to you, although I think it may have been in the Equity Challenge, I can't remember where I came across it, but a sort of a vocabulary booklet about kind of some of kind of the usage notes on these words. So for instance, the word lesbian can be used as an adjective or as a noun. Gay really should only be used as an adjective. And some of that is because of sort of the usage history of the word. So, oh yeah, my neighbor down the street, he's a gay. That sounds more pejorative than, oh, my neighbor down the street is gay. Because of the usage history, right? Because words mean what words mean in the context in which they're used. Bisexual is someone who is attracted to either men or women. There's another term that is coming into a little bit more common usage, which is pansexual. What that does is that it sort of explodes the binary piece of that. To be able to be sexually or romantically attracted to someone regardless of their gender, but see how that sort of gets us out of the one or two binary. So those three terms on the left are all about sexual orientation, which is about the way in which you are romantically or sexually attracted to someone of one or more genders. Queer can be used in context of sexual orientation. Queer can also be used in context of gender identity, which is the next set of words we're going to deal with. So gender identity is a person's self-identity. Are you male? Are you female? Are you both? Both does exist. Are you neither? Are you something else? And your gender identity may be the same or may be different from the sex that was assigned at birth. When we talk about sex, we are almost always really talking about what genitalia someone has. And when we talk about gender, we're talking about a sense of who someone is, their internal sense of who they are. So when we talk about gender identity, that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with what genitalia is on board. When we talk about someone who is transgender, that's referring to somebody whose gender identity does not match their assigned sex. And being transgender does not imply any sexual orientation one way or another. Someone who is transgender may have whatever sexual orientations they may have, kind of regardless of that transgender identity. And a cisgender person, that's a new word for some of us. Cisgender is a person whose self-identity, their gender identity, matches the sex that they were assigned at birth. So I, for instance, was assigned male at birth, and I identify as a man. And so I am cisgender. Now there's another layer. The other layer is gender expression. And gender expression is really how one presents oneself. So when Max was talking in their video about their gender expression, one of the things they called attention to was their blazer. And that their blazer feels like who they are. There are other people for whom wearing a skirt feels like who they are. And there are other people for whom wearing a tank top is really feels like who they are. So the ways that someone presents themselves in a gendered fashion is that gender expression. And again, this can be dress, demeanor, you know, how you walk, how you talk, how big do you move your hands, what's your social behavior. So a lot of the ways that that we can already be aware of, you know, some of the other stereotypes of, men and women behave in X way or Y way. Those are going to be part of how we culturally in our North American culture interpret somebody's gender. But they may be presenting their gender in a very specific and intentional way. And so that gender expression is kind of how you carry yourself, how you move yourself through the world. Go ahead, Bev.
Oh, thanks. Is it possible for someone to gender express themselves but yet they want to be, say, for example, may I use Max as an example?
Sure.
She wore the blazer. But what if another day she wanted to wear a scarf with it?
So, and I'm going to correct your pronouns again there. Max uses they, them pronouns and he, him pronouns.
Okay.
And so they use two different sets of pronouns. This is like right out at the edge of my comfortable knowledge. But my understanding is that most of the time, if somebody uses multiple sets of pronouns, that is often going to be sort of there's a set of pronouns I often prefer and a set of pronouns that I'm kind of comfortable being accidentally misgendered as. Or there's a set of pronouns that I'm feeling today and a set of pronouns I'm feeling this other day. So one of the other terms, this is not in our presentation, but actually is kind of like the one that just popped up, genderqueer. Mm-hmm. There's also a term, gender fluid, that I've also been familiar with. And that's when, you know, sort of your sense of where you fit on the gender spectrum moves kind of, you know, not necessarily day to day, but it may be, you know, sort of from season to season or depending on the situation, or sort of on a, yeah, you know, today I'm feeling this way. And so sometimes, and you really kind of have to know Max, which I don't know Max personally. You know, I would need to know them personally to earn the chance for Max to tell me which pronouns they'd like to use.
And I was using them as an example.
Yeah.
Only because I didn't know what happens if a person declares this gender this day, can they also declare next month, next season, as you say? And iffy, maybe they're floating between, more fluid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And so they may, you know, they may signal on a given day kind of which pronouns they're more interested in being taken as, because they choose to dress and present in a certain way. On the other hand, they may choose to dress and present in that way and still feel comfortable with these pronouns over here. And it's really not their job to dress in such a way that I can gender them correctly.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
So,
so it can be multiple things.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. They can be multiple choice.
Right. And we are allowed to be confused. I think
they understand that.
Yes. And it is appropriate for them to really need us as their friends and their allies. It's appropriate for them to need us to do our work and really find out, you know, how best to care for them. But yes, like we are allowed to be confused and really kind of struggle. So here's the picture of how these different categories go together. So we talked about sexual orientation on the first slide, right? Mm-hmm. And sexual orientation, that's the heart on your genderbread person. That's whom you love, right? To whom you are attracted with those sexual and romantic feelings, if anyone. So there's all kinds of more words out there. I really liked the way that Max said this. They said, your sexual orientation is who you go out on a date with. And your gender is who you go out on a date as. And you see that one's up in the brain. That's my sense of who I am, is my gender. Our genderbread person does have genitals. And when we talk about sex, what we are talking about is genitals. Again, someone's sex and their gender may match and they may not match. The the understanding that someone's sex and their gender may not match has been part of sort of human understanding for a long time, and in many different contexts. And some cultures have gone to the sort of cultural work of figuring out how to affirm those folks whose sex and gender happen not to match. So there are additional sort of categories that have been borrowed from non-Euro-American cultures that have also been used in this conversation. And then there is gender expression, which sort of runs from head to toe, but see how it's kind of outside the person, right? So your gender expression is how you show yourself to the world. And again, your gender expression is not required to specifically reflect your gender, your sexual orientation, or your sex. And so you can't necessarily assume. If you notice there down at the bottom as well, so we have the, at the top, we have the little picture of the person. At the bottom, we have all these spectrums, right? These are not sort of discrete categories. These spectrums, and this is again, kind of generally, culturally, this is how these have tended to go between male and female, between masculine and feminine. But again, those are not singular locations along there. Warren has a question.
I like this diagram that you've got up. To me, my first inkling on a person's identity, I don't know their sex. I can see their gender. I'm not really sure of their orientation, but my first clue probably comes from expression. Number one, the way they talk. And the other one is hand gestures. See, those are the first things that I'll pick up on. And, you know, to me, that's something that is maybe mimicked or copied from others that they've associated with. Maybe it comes natural to have an unusual way of, in my opinion, an unusual way of speaking, because I also know some that they speak very normal. I do not pick up on it. Their hand gestures are not there. Maybe it's a matter of degree on how much their identity is a mystery even to them. But of those four, like I say, my first clue comes from expression is when I'm kind of sensitive about it.
And in fact, in ordinary everyday life, expression is the only piece that we actually have access to. Because expression covers kind of all of those things you just described. So it covers dress, it covers voice, it covers those nonverbals of you know, amount of hand motion. It covers even sort of some specific ways of speaking. And gender as a behavioral thing is among other things culturally learned. So we learned, each of us in the places where we grew up, we learned how people of specific genders were expected to act and behave. We probably also knew growing up that there were people who had been assigned some one of those gender categories and really didn't feel comfortable expressing themselves according to the rules of that gender category. And that could be, we really don't learn anything else about them even from that, right? Because they could be, you know, yes, I'm, you know, I'm a boy, I'm growing up a boy, I know what boys are expected to do, and I also really just like to play with dolls and ponies. And that has nothing to do with anything on this list, right? Except that playing with dolls and ponies actually sort of slides me toward toward the feminine end of that gender expression scale, right? I'm just being true to myself and my interests. But the way that these gender categories are hardened around me culturally, I'm trying to navigate that. We can observationally learn something about someone's sexual orientation, right? You have to know them long enough to know for sure who it is that they are romantically or sexually attracted to. Some people will tell you that more readily than other people will. We only can learn somebody's gender identity by them telling us. And again, this is the difficult part of being an ally. They're not required to tell us. Anne has a question.
It's a comment that at least when I was growing up, if a girl was interested in boys things, sports and things, she might be called a tom girl, but she wasn't thought of as being a lesbian. Whereas if a boy played with dolls, they probably assumed that he was gay.
Yeah, there are ways in which the gender binary is specifically oppressive to men and boys. And that's one of them. That a woman who wears pants after, you know, 1972, a woman wearing pants is just a woman. Who cares if she wears pants, right? A man wearing a dress has transgressed a gender boundary that is still very much in place today. Which is not to say that there are not men who wear dresses. There are men who wear dresses routinely and feel very comfortable and happy, right? And dress wearing is not an absolute sort of biologically determined thing, right? We all know about the Scots, right?
That's what I was thinking.
So even, you know, even within kind of our cultural understanding in these hardened binary categories, we also still have room for men in skirts. But in North America, if you're not, you know, on Scottish dress-up day, a man in a skirt is a much bigger transgression of those boundaries than a woman in pants. Anne.
There's a gentleman from the Monroe Presbyterian Church that would always show up at Presbytery in a kilt. Now, I don't know if he still comes to Presbytery. And since we've been on Zoom, I have no idea. And I don't know if he's even a commissioner any longer, but I will admit, I always thought that was a little strange that he would always come to Presbytery in a kilt.
He was proud of his Scottish genealogy.
I've not gone to many presbytery meetings, but I did see that individual, and I think it happened to be at a meeting in Perry, and that would have been a couple years ago. Yeah. I just had one follow-up on this expression. To me, it kind of parallels people who have a Southern accent. They can influence the degree of the accent. They can emphasize it if they want, and then they can kind of get back to being a Yankee almost. And I think this expression the manner of speaking and some of their hand manner, that can be altered or what's the right word here? Changed as the situation might present itself, to the point that they look normal. But then in the next occasion, I might see this individual, and depending on the purpose of the gathering, very much affected speech and hand gestures that I didn't pick up on at the last opportunity I was with them in a group. So once again, whether it's by birth or whether it's acquired by associating with others, that is one of their symptoms that can be modified, their manner of speech and their hand gestures.
Yeah. And I would, if you want to impress your kids, the word for that, the word for modifying your manner of speech and your way of sort of presenting yourself based on what's going on around you is called code switching.
Code switching.
And that's really especially around language itself. So for instance, people whose home language is Spanish, but they live in a predominantly English-speaking setting such as Des Moines, are constantly figuring out whether they should speak Spanish or whether they should speak English, and jumping from one language to another based on the situation. And they're doing that for a lot of different reasons. The big reason being that Spanish is only safe in certain settings. Now, before we get too deep into Spanish, the same code switching is going on here with gender expression. And so my ears went up when you said the word normal. I'm pretty sure what you meant when you said normal was cisgender and heterosexual.
I stand corrected.
And I can recognize the way in which culturally we have normalized cisgender, heterosexual, male, white, and so English speaking. So all of those, you know, anything that's not sort of that sort of monolith actually involves that code switching, because people have to decide, okay, you know, kind of how am I presenting myself? If you were trying to pass, and this is any of us, if any of us was trying to pass at a fine English dinner party, and we were keeping on our English accent and making sure to carry, raise our pinky when we drink and present ourselves in just a certain way, we would go home absolutely exhausted at the end of that, right? Mm-hmm. Because that is work. That is really hard work. Code switching is super hard work. And code switching is, or the lack of need to, the lack of need to sort of examine my gender presentation, and am I presenting my gender in a way that is going to allow me to feel welcomed and allow me to feel safe? The fact that I don't have to think about that is gender privilege. Because as a man, as a cisgender man, as a heterosexual cisgender man, the way that I gender is just normal, right? In our dominant, because I belong to the dominant identities in our society. And So really the this is not necessarily always true, because people will present themselves in a variety of ways for a variety of reasons. But typically the farther from that norm someone finds themselves, kind of naturally, those ways that would look to us, oh, that's kind of making a big deal out of that, that's probably much more authentic, because it's dangerous, right? It's dangerous to be walking around presenting oneself in that way. For all of those reasons that that were bulleted out earlier, the danger of violence and the danger of losing your job. You can be fired from your job for being transgender in most of the country. You can be fired from your job for being gay in some of the country. So the idea that you've gotta present yourself in a certain way in order to be safe, that's also exhausting. Go ahead, Deb.
I was talking to, Bev. I was talking to both Jessica and Emma at different times, and I was telling them some of the racial equity challenges and some of the things we had talked about. And Jess said to me, and then later Emma said the same thing, you don't know what it's like to feel white, but when people look at you, you think you're white, but they think you're Asian. And I did note that they used to say our family was biracial, but now they say it's transracial. And there's another term for it too that I'm not recalling. And Nathan, you have two Asian kids too, so you may know it.
Transracial is the word we use for our family.
Okay, that's what we're using now in talking about it. But I had never given any thought to, Emma said it's exhausting. Jess was more like, well, this is just something we have to do. We were smart enough back in the 80s to read an article by a teenager who was raised in a Caucasian parent family from Korea also, who said, when you go into a Chinese restaurant, everybody expects you to know how to use chopsticks. Now, my whole family can use chopsticks because of this newspaper article that I read 30 years ago. And so we started learning as much Korean as we could, so that we eat a lot of Korean food and we make Korean recipes and we've read Korean books and videos and trying to understand. But it's still, no matter how much we did that, it's still easier for Perry and I to exist in this transracial family than it is for Emma and Matt and Jessica. And that's the same thing as this. It's exhausting.
Right.
Depending on the group of people you're with and what their understanding is.
Right. And that's part of why when I said that part of being an ally is realizing that you're not invited to every party.
Yeah.
Part of it, what that's about is recognizing that that pretty much all of society is a safe place for me. Because I don't have to think about how my racial identity matches the way that I'm racialized by other people. I don't have to think about whether I can hold hands with my spouse when I am walking down the street. I don't have to think about whether I'm safe doing that, right? Our LGBTQ folks and our folks from those minoritized racial identities and so forth really need spaces where I'm not horning in and making that unsafe for them, and they can just be who they are. And I would want them to also be able to be who they are with me, but they get to decide when they're comfortable with that. And what I can do is recognize my privilege and take take those opportunities to learn, learning myself, right? So this is your 5 points on how to be a better ally. And this is, again, like being an ally for anything. Today, we're talking about LGBTQ issues. But how can we be a better ally to LGBTQ folks? Check our assumptions. Why do we think the thing we think? Why do we assume the things that we assume? Would it be hard to train ourselves to use they, them pronouns until someone has told us what pronouns they use? You know, that's an option for us. Being an ally is often just about listening. You know, being someone that that is able to hear the words, yeah, this is hard for me. And understanding from a range of different angles how somebody, how folks experience, in this case, gender and sexual identity. This is a hard one. Allies don't take breaks, which is not to say that there can't be rest, but it is to say that that my friend Emmett doesn't get to take a break from being a marginalized and oppressed visibly queer person. They could hide their queerness, right? They, you know, they could choose to present themselves in ways that everybody else around them will like, and that's harder work than the work they're already doing, because it means not being true to themselves. And which means to be true to themselves, they don't get to take a break from constantly having to navigate a world that assumes a gender binary and they are gender queer. Mm-hmm. When we get it wrong, actually, Warren, you did it perfectly. And I was not even really trying to call you out. I was trying to recognize a piece of language that had grabbed me, and I didn't want to push you in a direction that you weren't comfortable being pushed. But when I caught the word normal, and you said, "Oh, point taken," that's how you do it. That's exactly how you do it. That's not how we who would like to think of ourselves as allies always do it. We who would like to think of ourselves as allies have a tendency to, when we get criticized or called out, we try to argue for our intentions and say, you know, that's not what I meant. Surely I would never do that. You must be misunderstanding me. Or like way super over apologizing, like, oh my goodness, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? And in fact, the best response when we have used somebody's wrong pronouns, when we have misgendered someone, when we have, dead named someone, which is, when we have used the name that someone doesn't go by. So a lot of, especially, transgender and non-binary folks, will move away from the name that their parents gave them, because the name that their parents gave them is often deeply attached to a gender identity that has been painful for them, because they've been, you know, they've been a round peg in a square hole, and it does not work, and it's painful. So often, this is not always the case, but often transgender folks will choose a new name as part of their process. The Olympic decathlete, Caitlyn Jenner, did that. And her name is Caitlyn Jenner. And you knew her by a different name before, but using that name is painful. Rather, hearing that name is painful. It probably doesn't hurt you to say it, but it hurts her to hear it. And so when we do that, that's called dead naming. Her previous name is her dead name. When we do that accidentally, because we have history, now none of us has direct history with Caitlyn Jenner that I'm aware of, but, you know, we have conceptual history even with her. And when we accidentally use her dead name, we say, oops, I meant Caitlyn. And then we move on. And eventually that just becomes natural. It actually took me a little while to remember what Caitlyn's dead name is, and we're not going to say it right now. So that's, you know, that's the practice apologizing, right? Practice saying, oh, sorry, fix it, move on. And then constantly educate ourselves. Warren.
Just as a follow-up, that having things pointed out to me or being called out happened because of two of my employment opportunities. As you know, I was at DMAC for 16 years and had an interesting assortment of students. And probably even more than that, I had a convenience store on the north side of Des Moines on ML King that really had a wide variety of clientele. And I guess I'm not too threatening a person either physically or verbally. So they were willing to take a chance on pointing out to that white boy that it was not always black, but generally it was black people correcting me on things that were offensive to them. DMAC, I had other than blacks pointed out, I had some Asians. But I guess it took a while for them to have the courage to say, I'm going to correct this guy. I think he may listen to me. And I think, I'm not bragging here, but I'm trying to say, I didn't see it with my own eyes that had to be pointed out to me. And when they did, I really was sincere and thank you that I can discontinue actions or sayings that were offensive to you, and also selfishly kept them coming back as customers and kept from being called into the dean's office at DMAC, which I have visited her office a time or two. I know you find that hard to believe. And I think they believed me that it was not deliberate. I was raised in the Midwest. I didn't have a choice on my parents. That, you know, I am who I am, who I am. And those two, well, 25 years, I was in a work environment that some of my shortcomings could be pointed out to me, and I sincerely did appreciate it.
And that does, you know, that really is a sign that you made yourself someone who is known to be willing to take correction and invite some of that disclosure. Because these are difficult things for a lot of folks to talk about, not because they necessarily are happy or unhappy with them. It's not an embarrassment thing. It is particularly when we're talking about these generally invisible identities, it's a danger thing. It's a safety thing. You know, can I tell you this thing about myself that you don't know? Those outcomes are still going on. There are also intersections between these different identities. So for instance, Black transgender women are through the roof targets of violence. Black transgender women, because of the way that blackness, female identity, and transgender identity The way that those overlap is exceptionally dangerous in North American United States culture. And so for someone to actually, you know, for someone to actually come out to someone that they're not sure knows this about them, that's a risky, risky move. And so to be an ally, really what we're hoping to do is to become people for whom it is safe for others to come out to us, and that they will know that we've got their back in those same ways that we just pointed out.
Years ago, I was at a Japanese tea ceremony at Gung Fu Tea downtown in the East Village with Covenant women. There were five of us, and one was Barb Bias. And Nathan, I don't think you had the chance to meet Barb, but we have to get a memorial plaque for Barb. I thought of that the other day. She passed away 3 years ago in May. So you were close to getting to know her, but I think you just missed her.
Okay.
She was a pretty neat lady, and she questioned the young, she questioned them behind the counter, and he was, see, now I'm getting myself all confused, even though I'm trying to learn all this. He was dressed as a male, but still looked more female, and was actually going through hormone therapy, and told us that the pronouns were they and them. And then none of us knew what to do or say after that. It was like, well, wait a second. And I think I felt flustered. And this was 3 years ago. I was clueless at that point. And I felt flustered. And this was the neatest person in the world who explained to us what it had been like in grammar school and high school. And they had graduated, they were an adult, and they loved their job, but they were still trying to take some college classes, and they were struggling every step of the way, and said how appreciative they were of us being able to talk about it and ask questions, which all five of us did. And it was one of the neatest 30-minute chunks of time in my life, because we were messing it up big time. But we were all friendly and kind and caring. And I think that they knew that, and it allowed for an open conversation. So listening, not being afraid to make mistakes is kind of important too, because when you just make yourself feel uncomfortable, it can make it worse and harder for the other person, maybe.
Yeah. And that they chose to take that chance, and they chose to do that work. Explaining who they are and explaining their experience to this bunch of perfectly nice people that they don't really know.
Right. But they felt your warmth.
I think so.
The critical part. You extended yourself enough to accept them and ask questions politely. I think all of that, I like to think all of that is what makes the world go round.
And you can always be an ally when you do that.
Yeah, and genuinely caring about them, and genuinely being open to what do I need to know in order to care about
them. Right, exactly.
As a school teacher, you get hundreds of people coming to you, and you are expected to accept every single one of them. And it's an amazing job to care, show that you care about each and every one of them. And I think as I talked to the people who want to be a teacher, I said, number one, you've got to love all kids. And then you have to somehow gain their trust and show that you care about each and every one of them.
And so, that they're safe.
And make sure that their environment is safe. And and that means part of that also means going to bat for them. Right. Mm-hmm. So part of this being an ally thing is, you know, it's not just knowing well, but it is also being able to step in and take some of that pressure off for somebody. And, you know, that takes risk on our part, and we have to take chances.
Why is that risky on our part? So as not to harm them?
So we want to make sure we do it in a way that doesn't harm them. And we have to do it in a way that is uncomfortable for, say, the person that we're correcting or the person that we are intervening against. Imagine this scene at the tea shop, but with a hostile questioner rather than a receptive questioner, or with a...
I think you missed the fact that they were from Covenant.
Right.
That's a given.
You know, or with a clerk who has just had this same conversation, but with their dad, and they don't have this in them right now. Right? And so... you know, what would an ally need to do in that situation?
Well, you know, the one thing you have to be aware of is that you don't ever, especially if you're trying to step in and intervene something that might be a tough situation, that you don't side with the person who's doing it wrong. And it's easy to do that. I don't know if I can explain it well enough, but it's easy to become, well, we're here and I agree with you, but mm-hmm. these are the pronouns they use. And you can't do that either. So you've got to keep that in the back of your head to not put yourself on the side with the person that you might relate to better because they're cisgender. But it doesn't, you've got to be really aware of that because that's really easy to let yourself do that.
Right. Yeah. And so it can be a, hey man, back off and, you know, patch that up later, you know, but right now just protect the person who needs the protection in that setting. Or, you know, we're all very socially savvy people too, right? So if we see the one where, you know, it's perfectly okay questioning, but what we can see looks like the person having the conversation, you know, is just, they're not actually enjoying this conversation. And we need to say, hey, Anne, why don't you come back to the table? And, you know, we don't have to tell her to back off, but we can try to break that conversation apart just because from what we can tell, it looks like one person is doing a lot more work than the other person.
What's the rally downtown that they have once a year? I want to say Rainbow Day, but that's not Pride what it's Fest. Called.
Gay Pride.
Gay Pride Fest. Okay. If you've not been to that, there's lots of good music and lots of good food and lots of good people, and you can get close to everybody, hopefully by next year when they do this. But it is an awesome experience. For someone who saw a lot of my students, saw a lot of people that I knew, it was just a really neat gathering that day. So if that's not something you ever said, yeah, I'm going to walk on down there, it's in the East Village, and it's just a fun place to walk around on a nice day. But you'll meet a lot of really incredible people and some people that you feel uncomfortable with. There was a wide variety of people that I was not totally comfortable with, but it was a good experience and it was a growing experience.
Were you feeling in danger, Deb?
There were some comedians and some transgender people that were fluent beyond my comfort level that I would be uncomfortable if they were heterosexual and white, I would have still been uncomfortable just because of who they were and their behavior.
Oh,
so it wasn't the transgender that made me uncomfortable. It was just that the outrageousness of what they were doing. And I think the sexuality of it in an open area that had lots of kids too bothered me. So that was part of it. But there weren't that many. It wasn't like that was the whole thing. It wasn't. It was, there were actually two different groups. And it was kind of, you knew what was coming. You could have gone around a couple tables and totally not gone by there. It was easy to see it from afar because they were loud.
And not having been there in your brain in that experience, I don't have answers to this, but I would be interested if we had a bunch more time to interrogate the way that gender and gender expectations did play into the sense of discomfort, which is not to say that there may not have been something about that situation that also just made you uncomfortable. You know, that we have a word for, or we don't have a word for, but we have, you know, we have a phrase, a man in a dress, right? And you go to a certain set of pictures and expectations. That's how gender norms work in your brain. Even if your gender sort of deep-seated gender identity is, oh man, I wish I could be in a dress.
I wish I could do that.
Right. Even then, this internalized cisgender normativity is there, making us think, oh, I'm not really sure I should do this.
Exactly.
The other piece, Deb, that I would interrogate on kind of what you just described was the as you talked about the amount of sort of sexuality kind of out in front in a sort of a family friendly setting. And the piece I would wonder about that is what's on TV right at the moment.
Oh, how about it?
and how similar or different.
And I get uncomfortable with that too. So
yeah. And that's okay too. You certainly can feel uncomfortable with that. But that's another one of those places where part of the way that this gender privilege works is that that cisgender straight people can get away with more because they're not already transgressing these gender and sexual orientation boundaries that are kind of culturally situated around us.
Well, I have one comment before this wraps up, and I never know when you're going to wrap it up.
I always have to wait for a Warren comment first.
Yeah, most of you know Claudia and I have these three great kids. Michael's 46 and Karen's 43 and Nick, I think, is 41. But anyway, Russ and Mary probably know him the best. Of the three, my daughter ended up at DMACC after 5 years in Florida. So other than the 5 years and maybe 3 years in Minneapolis, she's always been in Central Iowa. And I am a member of the DMACC Pioneers. Those are retired DMACC people. So one monthly meeting, it's always on a fourth Thursday. I'm out there and I'm talking to one of the liaison, the staff member that's the liaison. I said, well, when this meeting's over, I'm going to go over to building three and visit my daughter. And this liaison said, well, Karen won't be there because they are at a convention in Chicago. And she, as the advisor of the DMACC LGBTQ community, has been gone she's the advisor. Well, you can imagine, having not been aware of that, I was proud of myself and I don't know what I look like. But she was not willing to share that with me directly. See, I got it secondhand. And we haven't really talked too much about it, but later on, I just made the comment that so-and-so reminded me that since you were the advisor, that you were, and I think she was arranging transportation too. You know how that is, hurting a bunch. And a lot of these students had never really been, I think it was in Chicago. They were staying in downtown Chicago in some hotels, but I don't know how she came about that decision. I think they were struggling, DMAC was struggling to find an advisor. I don't think it was something that maybe she sought out on her own as much as somebody at DMAC approached her. But once again, it just gives you a, you think you know your kids, and she lives here in Altoona. It's not like when she was in Florida, I didn't see her very often, but just out of the blue, she felt called to, this organization has to have an advisor. And I think she's been doing it probably going on 4 years, maybe five.
So this, each of these two examples really let us know that one, we've got experts right around us that we may not even have known were experts until they went to Chicago. So there are already folks who are also doing this work right alongside us. And it can be difficult to say, hey, I'm invested in this work. It can be really difficult to say, hey, I need to explain to you who changed my diapers something important about who I am, right? That's a very difficult conversation. And just to say that when we talk about LGBTQ plus inclusion, we are talking about people that we already know and care about. So thank you for this conversation that we had this evening. For learning some of the pieces of how we can really be advocates and allies for the folks that we already know, whether we know them or not. Thank you for listening. Learn more about our mission at wdmcovenant.org.